on the fifth shir, the Gada. Means in the pasuk Vayishma Elokim es Nakasam, Vayizkor Elokim es Briso, es Avram, es Yitzhak, ves Yaakov. So Hashem heard the, literally the groanings of Bnei Yisrael, and he remembered the bris, etc. So he asks, in what schus did Klal Yisrael have that Hashem listened to them when they were crying out? So he brings from the Chasam Sofer, who asks, on the pasuk, V'gamani shamati es nakat b'nei Yisrael. So he asks, what does that mean? Hashem says, and also I heard the groaning of B'nai Yisrael. What do you mean, also I heard? Who else is supposed to hear? Hashem hears, and he says, Hashem says, I also heard. Who's the all? So he answers both these questions based on a Meshech Chochma. Meshech Chochma says on the Pasuk, V'yitzavim el B'nai Yisrael, bring the quote for you, the whole pasuk. It says, "V'yedaver Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron." Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron. "V'yitzaveim el Bnei Israel." He commanded them concerning Bnei Israel. "Vel Paro melech Mitzrayim lotziat Bnei Israel meretz Mitzrayim." So, Meshech Chochma brings an interesting Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says that Hashem was telling here Moshe and Aaron to command Israel that the Bnei Israel should send away their slaves. In other words, any Yid that has a slave, he should send them away. So, it's difficult to understand. What do you mean the Jewish people were enslaved? What do you mean the Jewish people had to send away their slaves? So, Meshech Chochma explains that it's not so crazy. What happened was there were wealthy Jews in Mitzrayim, despite the Shibud ever. There were still wealthy businessmen, Jewish businessmen in Mitzrayim. And they bought slaves from the Mitzrayim. Poor, you know, he's poor Yidden that didn't have anything, and the Mitzrayim these wealthy Jews would buy some Yidden to work for them from the Mitzrayim. So now along came Hashem and told Moshe and Aaron, tell these wealthy businessmen that have these Jewish slaves that they should free them. Why? Because that's how Kodesh Baruch Hu works, Mida Keneged Mida. If you free the slaves, then I will free the slaves. That's how Hashem works, Mida Keneged Mida. He says that's the, once the Chasam Sofer, a wealthy man whose business was going under, whatever, came to him and asked him for a bracha, whatever. So he says, here's what you have to do, he told the man, Eitza. He says, based on the Torah, you should help a fellow Yid with his parnasa. So he says, Rebbe, no problem, give me a bracha, then my parnasa will be fine, and then after I get back on my feet, I'll help another Yid with his parnasa. He says, no. He says, lafach. If you want your parnasa to go well, Shem works, mida keneged mida. And therefore, first help this other Yid, and then you'll see, Hashem will help you, because you help the person with parnasa, so you'll help with parnasa. He says that's the pshat answers we explained. We said v'gamani shamati b'nei Yisrael. When Hashem says, "I also heard," who else is listening? The answer is that Hashem saw, and this answers the first question also: what schus did they have to Hashem to listen? Because Hashem saw that the Yidden felt bad for their fellow Yidden. Besides their own plight, they cared for the plight of their fellow Yidden. They felt bad for them. And therefore, they cried for their fellow, their brethren, the Jews. So Hashem says, you're crying for your fellow Jew, so I'm going to cry for you. Mida keneged mida. Memeil, that's v'gamani shamati. You heard, and you felt bad. I also hear, and I'm also kibiyachol feeling bad, and therefore I'm going to save you.
The implication is that these rich Jews work for these poor Jews as hard as the Mitzvim do.
Okay, not necessarily. It doesn't have to be at the same level, but okay. Brings here a little maisa. We see this hanhaga with the Rebbe Mizlotchev. He was in the concentration camp and work camp, whatever, and during the Holocaust. And he recalls that one day he came back to the barracks and exhausted, of course, in a hard day's work with his little ration of bread that he was given. He says he comes into the barracks and he sees lying there fellow Yid who looked like it was his last moments in this world. He was starving to death. And he saw that. So he ran over, and without thinking twice, he took his own bread ration, the Rebbe, and he gave it, he right away put it into the mouth of his fellow Yid, which gave him, revived him, and he gave the Rebbe a bracha that, in the schus of what you did, you should be zoicha to live through the war, get through this war. So the Rebbe, you know, thanked him for the nice bracha, but, bracha is very nice, but you can't eat with a bracha, and he's starving himself now. You know, that was his food ration for the day. So he himself then felt like this is it, you know. So he was lying there in the bunk, and he said, Hashem, you know, please help me. I helped my fellow Yid, and now I'm starving to death. And so what happened is that I was lying there, and one of the our kapo comes in to the barracks, and he sees me lying there and very bad matzav, and he said, what's wrong? You know, you look terrible. So he says, yeah, he says, I'm starving to death. I'm starving to death. So what happens? The kapo takes out of his pocket a bag of sugar cubes, and he gives me the bag of sugar cubes. He says, that, you know, sucking on these sugar cubes, I might revive me. And he says, saved my life. So I saw that Kosh Baruch Hu, you know, I say, works. I help my fellow Yid. Hashem sends somebody else to help me. How much the Mida can I get Mida? Okay. On the Pasuk, Kola Ben Hayilo and Hayora Tashlichu. The Paro commanded to throw all the children into the water, into the Nile. So he asks, you know, says it's very strange. Imagine, he gives for an example the Arabs. Let's say one day the government would say, okay, all Arabs, you're going to work. And you're going to work for us for free. We're not going to pay you. You're going to be our slaves. And not only that, all your kids that are born, we're going to throw them into the river. Now, what do you think their reaction would be? The biggest intifada, right? What are you talking about? Work for free, throw our kids in the eye, forget it, it's going to be the biggest uprising. So he says, how come we don't see that the Jewish people made a fuss? They didn't fight. Why didn't they create a war, you know, like against the Egyptians, you know, we were working for us, we're going to throw your kids into the river. What's going on? They didn't fight. Why? It's an interesting idea. The Imri Noam. He said, there's a midrash that says that how did the Egyptians accomplish what they did of having us work for them, etc. Said that they offered, they said, listen, we need some work done. Whoever works for us, we'll pay them 1,000 shekels an hour. So he says, wow, 1,000 shekels an hour, it's a great salary. So all the Yidden, you know, came. They said, fine, you know, we'll work for you, 1,000 shekels an hour. So they worked the whole day, 8-hour day, made themselves a lot of money. And the Egyptian said, okay, tomorrow, same thing, you willing to come back? Said, sure, at that rate. What happened the next day was a chamsin. It was a boiling, boiling hot day. And the Egyptian says, we'll tell you what, we understand it's very hot today, we'll give you 1,500 shekels an hour. 1,500 shekels an hour, whoa. So as hot as it was, they all came to work again. But since it was, you know, hard, very hot, so they took off their shirts and stuff, you know, because it was very hot, so they took off their, I'm sure they work without their shirts on because it was so hot. So while they were working, the Egyptians snuck in and took their clothing, their shirts, whatever, that they had hung up, and without them realizing. And then they went to their homes, and they went to their wives and said, you know, your husband would like you to give him all your ammunition, you know, your guns and your swords and whatever that you have around the house. And he gave me the shirt to show you. This is his shirt, right? She goes, yeah. He says, it's to show you that, you know, I'm not making this up. Your husband wanted, here's the shirt. He asked me to show you his shirt. Fine. So she says, okay, fine. So they gave the guns and this, whatever, all the ammunition, gave it to the thing, and they took it away. What happened? The next day, the Egyptian says, okay, and everybody's coming to work again for free. We're not paying you. You're slaves. They said, slaves? No way. We're going to make a war. So they ran to their homes. They said, okay, give me my guns. Where's my gun? Where's my gun? Where's my sword? What's going on over here? So she, his wife said, I gave it to the Egyptians yesterday. They came with it. They asked and said, you have it. It was what? Anyways, they were left without any ammunition, anything. No ammunition. You can't wage a war. And Mela, that's how the Egyptians got. So says Rabbi Goel Kharif, El Kharif, he says that it comes out that what was the catalyst that led to their enslavement? The fact that they weren't careful with their clothes. They took off their clothes. They were, you know, without a shirt. So they realized that that's got them into the shibud. So what did they decide to do to get them out of the shibud? To be careful, loshinu et melvusham. He said, that's it. We have to be more careful with our clothing. We're going to make sure we don't change into other clothing. That got us into this mess. So hopefully being careful with our clothing will get us out of this mess. And as Chazal say, that was one of the reasons why they were redeemed. Also on the pasuk, kol ben yilod yirah tashlichu, brings down that also Goel Al Karif said that Amram, who's the, as we know, was the gadol ador, and he was zochet to give birth to Moshe Rabbeinu. So what happened? He was in the house. He was born early, whatever, and then they were able to hide him for 3 months. And then they saw that's it. It's dangerous. We have to send him away. The Egyptians are going to come. So the Torah relates that his mother, Yocheved, made a teva and a little basket for him and put Moshe Rabbeinu in or whatever. So he asks the Pasha the question. He says, why Yocheved? I mean, why didn't Amram? Wait, he didn't care? He says, here, okay, whatever you want to do. I mean, his son that they saw was special. The whole house lit up, whatever. It is special. You know, son, they saw this is not a Pasha person. And Yocheved makes a basket, Yocheved did this, and sends him out. Where was Amram? Why, he didn't care about his son? Why only Yocheved? So he brings the kashas from the Al-Sheikh, and the Al-Sheikh answers, Yavaltik. He says, Vadai, you know, Amram would have liked to, wanted to, you know, help out over here to save Moshe Rabbeinu, but he saw, you know, sometimes it's better to stay away. Why? He says, who is his wife, Yocheved? She was one of the chief midrash, right? She from Pua, right? That was Yocheved and Miriam. So his wife was one of the head midrash, as we know, whereas we're mamish, like Moser Nefesh, in saving the Jewish people, the babies, instead of killing them, they enlist the paro, and they kept them alive, whatever. So so he saw his wife was this tzedakist, that was mamish Moser Nefesh. So he says, you know what? If I start getting involved in here, it's only gonna, you know, only can mess things up. You know, she's a tzedakis, she's someone, you know, you're a shemayim, you're a senefesh, better I shouldn't get involved. Let the saving come through her. If it comes clean, you know, netto, just through her, then there's a chance. If I get involved, I'm not as great as she is, and it can only, it's not as pure. So in order to have the saving should be tahor, and he said, I have to leave it totally to my wife. That's what he did, and as we know, it worked. He brings it a little bit lamaisi. He says we see throughout the generations also that when Rosh Yeshivas or whatever, they want to build the yeshiva, they also are careful that as much as they can, that the kesef should be tahor, should be not with the negative influences in there, should be clean. It brings a maisa from Yisrael Cohen, the Rosh Yeshiva of Mishkan HaSatora, that he said that once he went to America to collect for the yeshiva, and he promised that whoever gives, I assume a certain amount, whatever, will get a bracha from Rav Michli Yehuda Lefkowitz. So in the end, he had 21 people that gave these donations, and he came back to Eretz Yisrael, and he went to Rav Michli Yehuda, and he gave him the names of these 21 people, if he can, you know, give them a bracha, whatever, daven for them. So Michal stands up and he starts reading the names, and one of the names he skipped on. So Rav Yisrael said, Rosh Yeshiva, you skipped on a name over here, and I promised these people that they'll give money, they'll get their name mentioned, whatever, bracha. So he says, yeah, but this guy's a Mechal Shabbos, so I don't, not giving him bracha. So he didn't know that. He said, that's interesting. So he looked into it, and sure enough, it was true. This guy didn't realize it, but one of the guys he got a big donation from was a Chal Shabbos. So even though it was a big Nisayon, because he had the donation in his hand. I mean, the guy promised already, but still didn't want to, as we said, mix in things which are not money, which is not kosher 100% when building the yeshiva, and he forfeited that donation, since the guy was Michal Shabbos, even though it was a big loss for him, was hard for him. As we saw, the importance of buildings to be built on the basis of Tahara. On the Ketav Eloah Yedei Shaliach, and Hashem brought us out of Mitzrayim without a Shaliach. So he raises a famous question, and he gives a Pasha to answer. It's Rabbi Aaron Toisig. Asks the following. If we would ask, let's say you take somebody who never saw a Haggadah before. Okay? And you say, okay, I've seen Mitzrayim, and you tell a person, tonight we tell over the whole story. And we would ask such a person, whose name do you think was mentioned the most in the Haggadah? Okay? What's the obvious answer? Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, he said, Moshe Rabbeinu, that was that, excuse me, try him, Moshe Rabbeinu. So you'd think he's probably mentioned 100 times in the Haggadah, right? Moshe Rabbeinu. Very strange. Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned in the Haggadah at all, except only once, just Agav, by Yemini Moshem and Moshe Abdo, this happens to Agav be mentioning, not as part of the, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's it. He's not mentioned in the Haggadah. It's a Pella. Moshe Pella. And even is mechazik the question even more based on a nusak of the Haggadah that the Gemara says in Psachim, Daf Kuftet Zayin, Amud Aleph, and that Rav says, that he says, we start off Midchilo Avodah Zara, Hayu Avoseinu, and then the Gemara says that you're supposed to bring down these psukim in Yeshua. Okay, Vayomi Yeshua, Chule, Bever, Yehanahar, Yeshua, Vaseichem, Eolam, and then Vyakov, Vuvanav, Yardu, Mitzrayim, etc. And then there's another pasuk that follows right there in Yeshua. There, it's left out in the Nusach. What's that pasuk? It says, Ve'eshlach es Moshe, ves Aaron, ve'gof es Mitzrayim. And then I sent Moshe and Aaron to plague the Mitzrayim. So, Dafka left out that by now. It seems like there's a and that wasn't accidental. Mentioning these psukim when it comes to the one more pasuk, and then I said Moshe. Oh, that's not in the Nusach of the Haggadah. Dafka leaving out Moshe. Like, why make a point? A point of leaving out Moshe happens to be you don't mention it, but to Dafka not mention Moshe Rabbeinu, why not? So he answers Derech Mashal. Says, imagine if the king sent one of his servants, whatever, his ministers, whatever, to help a certain guy, and in the name of the king, and the person was helped, and then so he asked, please, could he have a meeting with the king because he wants to personally thank him for his chasadim and for the help, whatever. So fine, he gets a meeting with the king. So he says that it would be improper, etiquette wise, whatever you want to say, it would be improper that when he goes into the king to say, this tsar, this minister, he's such a wonderful guy, he mamish helped me and everything, even though he helped, the king sent him. It's true, but when you're speaking directly to the king, you don't mention the agent. Even though it's the king's agent. But is this not the king? You say, king, thank you so much, what you did for me. To mention the agent in front of the king, it's not, don't do such things. It's not proper etiquette. We may let the same thing over here. While we're speaking to Kosh Baruch Hu, thanking him so much for the Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's not proper to mention the agent. Mention Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's what he says. Right, others say a nice word. He doesn't mention it here, but they say that why isn't Moshe Rabbeinu's name mentioned? He said because they say who was the first person to tell over the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in history? It was Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because the Yidden, they didn't have to tell it over; they were living it, right? I Moshe Rabbeinu, yeah, because Moshe Rabbeinu's children were not in Mitzrayim. He left them behind, right, by Yisrael. So they weren't there during the Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Mistama, eventually, when he met up with his family, he told over the whole story. He goes, you're not going to believe what happened. Hashem did this and Hashem did that and whatever. And Moshe Rabbeinu is telling over the whole story. So he was the first person in history to tell over Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And we can probably assume Moshe being the Anam Mikol Adam, know, the most humblest person in the world, he probably didn't take credit. He wants to say, and then I did this, and then I did that. And Stama Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do that. That's not him. Right? So what did he do? He said, Hashem did this, Hashem did that. Whatever. He didn't even left himself out of the picture. So Mela, since the first Sipur was without Moshe Rabbeinu's name mentioned, so that set the stage that we also don't mention Moshe Rabbeinu's name in it. Uba'oso zeh ha-mate. He said, the otot, that's the mate. He says, why was the mate zoche, you know, this the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu, that all these moftim and everything should come through this mate? You know, didn't need, obviously, the mate, but Hashem, dafka, you know, wanted it to come through this piece of wood, this mate. Well, what's the significance? So he said, based on a story, again, Rabbi Goel El-Karif, said that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, before he became well-known, you know, he was lived in a city called Memel, in Germany. And he had this tremendous desire to start a yeshiva that's based on, put an emphasis on Mussar, you know, he started the Mussar movement. And he was looking to start this, but he needed a place, he needed to get started yeshivas. So he wanted to start a yeshiva there. He was having a tough time getting things going until a carpenter, he says, Rebbe, if you want, I have a little tiny room I'm willing to, you know, give to you to use, and I have some benches and tables, whatever, you can make that your yeshiva, this little room I have, you can start, that can be your yeshiva. So he thanked him profusely, and he said, wonderful. So he started his yeshiva in his little room. Okay? And what happened? Slowly but surely, word got out, whatever, and things became greater and greater until the rest is history, as they say. Right? You know, the whole Hamusar movement started from that little room at this Nagargay. So Rabbi Yisrael said, you see from here, you know, that imagine the schus of this Nagar, you know, to all the people learning in history, learning Musar, and it's all because of this little Nagar that gave this little room and a few chairs and tables. So he says, it's the lesson being that, you know, you don't need big things. Sometimes the tiny little things could bring big things. Mimele, he says, that's the lesson also by the mate. Think, wow, it's a piece of wood, this little stick. He says, yeah, but look what this stick did. Brought the Esther Makiv, right? Brought all the Yeshua to Klal Yisrael. It's the teachers, they shouldn't be mimezalzel in a little stick. And or any little mice. Don't think, it's just a little mice, what's the big deal? You never know, right? Every little thing, good mice can have tremendous repercussions. Elu Eser Makos Sheviya Kodesh Baruch Hu Al Hamitzri. The Ben Ishchai says on the Pasuk, V'samti Fidus Bein Ami Uvein Amecha, I made a distinction between my nation and your nation, says in the Pasuk. So the Ben Ishchai points out that Ami made a distinction between my nation, Ami, and Amecha. The gematria of Ami is 120, and the gematria of Amecha, your nation, is 130. So what's the difference between 120 and 130? Eser, 10. So to say that during the Eser Makos, there's going to be a distinction between the Jews and the Mitzrim. The Mitzrim are going to be affected, but not the Jewish people. Something produced by Nami and Amecha, that's the Eser Makos. Okay, so we have come to the Eser Makos now. Mentioned some things in some of the Makos. Start off with Dam. As we know, the Makas Dam, the Jews became wealthy, the Chazal tells us. How so? So the Mitzrim had no water, everything turned to Dam, and they saw a Yid, you know, with some water. He says, hey, can I have some water? And he goes, okay, here, and he gives them the water, and it turned to Dam. And he says, yeah, what happened? Okay. what can I do? So then he says, okay, I have an idea. You know, I'm dying of thirst. How about, you know, I'll take this cup of dam and cup of water, right? You drink from it, and I'll drink from it at the same time. You know, let's do two straws, you know. So then I'll get... So then, no, it didn't work. And the straw of the Jew came the dam, the straw of the Jew came the water, straw of the Mitzri came the dam, and good. So what was the only thing that the only way they were able to get some water is if they purchased it from the Jewish people. This is well known. So he asked a couple of questions here in the name of Rav Shalom Shvadran. So it says in the time of Alexander the Great, famous Chazal, that the Mitzrayim, they said that we want our money back. The Jewish people, when they left Mitzrayim, they took all our gold and their silver or whatever when they left Mitzrayim, and we want it back. So he asks, how come they only wanted that money back? Why didn't they ask for the money back that the Jews took from them when they were at the Makas Dam? Right? They couldn't drink the water unless they paid for it. So they could have come down with a taina. Hey, you ripped us off. We have nothing to drink, and you took our money. You know, just so we can have the water, and we want our money back. They didn't have it. They didn't have a taina for that on that money. Only the money that the Jews won when they left Mitzrayim. That's why. And furthermore, he says, why did the Jews sell the Mitzrayim the water? They should have said, forget it. We're not selling you. Die. what do we care? You know. But instead, they sold them. Why? And he says, and if you're going to say, well, because they forced them to sell. So, well, if they forced them to sell, so then why did they pay all this money? They could have just took it from them. So he explained. That he says that we want to, you know, make it a little bit see it clear in our own minds. Says, imagine, you know, says a Nazi officer, right? He comes up to a Yid, you know, in the concentration camp, whatever it might be, and in Auschwitz, he says, and he's very thirsty. He happens to be very thirsty. This Nazi, he comes up to this Yid and he sees he has a little a cup of water. He goes, "Give me that cup of water. I'm thirsty." So what's his action going to be? No, die, you know. No, he's scared of the Nazi, you know. So he goes, okay, here. He gives him the cup of water. And then, let's say it turns into blood, right? He goes, hey, what's going on over here? He goes, this is very, very apologetic. He goes, I'm sorry, I don't know. It was water. So he gives it back to him, and then he sees again, it's water. So he says, water, give me that. He gives it to him again, it turns to blood. And he says, well, what's going on over here? He says, I'd love to give it to you. I don't have no problem. I just, what can I tell you? So he says, well, is there any, I'm dying of thirst. Is there anything, any solution to the problem over here? So he says, it's a bit low naively. It's hard for me. You know, but I heard that if you give me money, you know, then, it'll be able to have your water. So he goes, yeah, how much? So he goes, nothing. It's a little bit, half a franc, you know, something. So he goes, okay, here. And he throws the yid a half a franc. And what happens? The water doesn't, it still turn to blood. So he says, well, what's going on? So he says, I don't know, I guess you have to pay a little bit more. So he paid a little bit more, and a little bit more. And finally, after a certain amount, then it turned to water. So it comes out, he says that that's how it worked in Mitzrayim also. In other words, when the Jews, they weren't gonna, you know, they couldn't stand up against the Mitzrayim. They were like the Nazis. Like, they were scared of them. You know, so here, take the water, whatever. But Kadosh Baruch Hu said, no. You can't just take the water. I want the Jewish people to have money out of this. And how much? Hashem judged each Mitzri according to who he was. There were ones, of course, there were bigger Rishayim and lesser Rishayim. The ones who were lesser Rishayim, they have to pay less money. The ones who are bigger Rishayim have to pay more and more and more and more until Hashem says, fine, now you paid enough, now you can have the water. So Mele says, that's why we find that we don't, or don't find that some rich Arab, you know, sheik, you know, purchased, gave $1 billion and bought all the water in Mitzrayim and then distributed free to, you know, to their Mitzri. Why? Because it doesn't work like that. Each Mitzri had to pay personally for the water, and how much he paid was depend on how big of a Rasha he was. And that's why, in the time of, he says, of Alexander the Great, They didn't ask for the money because it wasn't the Jews that you know asked. They said, "Here, take it for a little. We don't care." You know, they were scared of them. Take a little. It was Hashem that said, "No. You're gonna pay a lot because you're a Russian. This bigger Russian had to pay anymore." It was all Hashem's doing. They saw it wasn't the Jews. They were prepared to give it for close to nothing. But it was Hashem that said, "No." And find each mitzri according to his level of rishus. Svardeya. It says at the end of the Makkah, it says, V'yomer Moshe leParo, Yitpa'er alai lematay atir lecha, levadech olamcha lechrizat svardim. So Moshe said to Paro, tell me when do you want me to take away the svardim? So he says, machar, tomorrow. So, famous question everybody asks, why would he say tomorrow? Would he enjoy these frogs so much? You know, he said, get rid of it right now, you know. Probably the most famous answer they say is that he tried to outsmart Moshe. He thought Moshe Rabbeinu, he wasn't in control, and Moshe Rabbeinu knew that it was going to automatically disappear today, and he wanted to show Moshe Rabbeinu up, so he says, tomorrow. He says, because I'm sure Moshe came to me now knowing that it's going to disappear now, and I'm going to obviously say now, so I'm going to outsmart him, I'm going to say tomorrow. So then Moshe Rabbeinu said, no problem, tomorrow. Show him Moshe Rabbeinu calls the shots. Anyway, that's the most famous answer. But he brings here from the Kerem Tzvi, another upshot, says that the Jewish people, as he mentioned before, they were supposed to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. In the end, they only had Shibud, 210 years altogether, but they were Shibud is only 86 years. And as we mentioned before, how was that? How they're supposed to be 400 years? The Terence is, some of the Rishonim say, because the Koshi Shibud was mashlim the time. In other words, if they would have had a regular, not such a difficult Shibud, they would have to have been there for 400 years. But they overworked them, so they paid it off, the debt of the 400 years earlier, and that's why they left a shorter time. So Paro saw this, and he saw, therefore, how Kosh Baruch Hu works. In other words, sometimes, you know, you do things or normally, easily, whatever, takes longer. If you want to get through it quicker, you have to suffer more. So Paro said, he thought the same thing's going to work here with the Makkah. You know, the Sfardim are, you know, he says, wait, if I say that I want it to get rid of it today, then it's going to be a very, very strong Makkah. If I want it to be a little bit less of a Makkah, not so strong, I'll push it off, because then I have until tomorrow, so the whole Makkah gets, you know, extended until tomorrow, so it's not so true. If I want it early, right now, it's going to have to be very strong. So he said, okay, machar. This way it won't be as strong today, because it'll take the Makkah will take an extra day. That was Paros Cheshmet.
Logical, because if he said end it now, would it be the end of it?
No, now it's today. I know, I don't mean at that second. He said, you know, today or tomorrow. So today would figure if today's going to go the whole day really, really hard because it has to, you know, or tomorrow. Okay, Shechin says that the first, you find by the first Makos, first five, Damas Vadea Kini Marav Dever, the first five. That Paro, he was hardening his own heart. Right? Only by the sixth Makkah, by Shechin, it says V'yechazek Hashem eslay Paro. Then it started, Hashem was the one that was mechazek his heart. Meaning he would have perhaps himself wanted to send the Jewish people away, but now Hashem said no. So the first five, so the question is, what changed? Why the first five, Paro himself it was not going to, we're not prepared to send, and every heart in his own heart. Only after that, only from the sixth, then all of a sudden, Paro was really going to, would have been prepared to send him, but Hashem hardened. So he brings an interesting shah from the Ramban. Said that really, Paro would have been prepared right away to send also. But why? Why didn't he? Because he was embarrassed to admit the truth. The, you know, he had the Khartoumim there with him the whole time, you know, by Dom Toyder came where the Khartoumim were there. And he didn't want to show that as if in front of his, you know, Khartoumim, that he's a softy, you know, because that's not a Paro. Paro's to be, you know, strong king, you know. So if he's going to say, okay, here, send, go, you know, he says, I can't show my weakness. I have to show that I'm strong. Even though he himself was very scared and he would have liked to send him away, but he couldn't show it. It's like peer pressure, right? Peer pressure. You didn't want to show in front of the Khartoumim. Okay, so what changed? So that first five, now how come in the sixth month all of a sudden he was prepared to send him away? There it says, because it says in the Pasuk, V'lo yachlu ha-Khartoumim lamod lifnei Moshe b'pnei ha-Shechin, ki haya ha-Shechin b'Khartoumim u'b'chol Mitzrayim. They couldn't stand there anymore, meaning they were, the Khartoumim were embarrassed. They had the Shekhin on them. Paro didn't have the Shekhin, right? But they did. And they were covered with these boils all over their face, and it would look disgusting. They looked like monsters, right? So they were embarrassed to stand in front of the king, you know, in front of Paro, looking like these monsters with these boils all over their faces and pus coming out. It was like disgusting. So they lo yachlu lamor, as the Pasuk said, they left because they were embarrassed to be in front of Paro. So now Paro's Khartoumim are not there. So he doesn't have the peer pressure anymore. So now he was, now that nobody's around, he was prepared to send the Jewish people for evil. He would have done so earlier, but he was embarrassed, you know, in front of his Khartoumim. Now the Khartoumim weren't there. He was prepared to send, and therefore Hashem said, no, you're not sending him yet. I'm going to harden your heart. And that's why here it says that Hashem hardened his heart. He says we find the opposite hanhaga by the Gedol Yisrael, that they are willing to they're not embarrassed of peer pressure. They're willing to admit when they see the truth. They'll admit even that it might be embarrassing. And the classic source for that is Yehuda and Tamar, right? And he said, she was pregnant, whatever, and they said she has to be burned. And she says, you know, who are these from? And she goes, Sad kami meni. Right, Yehuda said, and as Rashi says, she was his tzedekah, she's right, and mimeni, that her pregnancy is from me, mimeni. And he could have just walked over to her and whispered in her ear, okay, I'll get you out of this, and let's just keep this quiet, you know, and then say that she's a tzedekah, whatever, and get her off the hook, and nobody would find out about it from him, whatever, and keep her quiet. But no, he said in front of everybody, and who was there? He says Yaakov, his father, was there. Yitzchak, his grandfather, was there. The Shvatim were there, in front of everybody. He announces again, what? He says, look, what's the truth is the truth. I have to say what the truth is, and even though it's a little bit embarrassing, I made a mistake, whatever, and I'm going to change. So that's a yid. So the Yehudi is al shem to the lashon of to be modeh. Yehudi is lashon of to lodot. That's a yid. A yid is not scared to admit his faults. That's a yid. Okay, and last thing. It says by the Barad. It says before the Barad, it says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Ashkem Baboker, Visasev Lifnei Paro, Vamar Teilav Komar Hashem al Kei Yevrim, Shalachas Amivi Abduni, Kibabamazos, Ani Sholech, Es Kol Magefosa. So he says, now I'm going to send all my plagues, right? El Libchava Vadecha Vamecha. So what's that mean now before Barad? He says, I'm going to send all my plagues. What's all my plagues? So Rashi says, Lamadu mikan, we see from here, Shemakas Bechoros Ishkula Keneged Kol HaMakas. That the Makah of Makas Bechoros is as weighty as all the Makas combined. So everybody asks the question and says, this makes no sense. What does Makas Bechoros have to do with anything? This is Makas Barad, okay? And then he says, I'm going to send all my Megefosai now and to thing, meaning the Makas Barad. And along comes Rashi and says, from here you see the Makas Bechoros at Shkula Kenegi Kol. Makas Bechoros, what does Makas Bechoros have to do with anything? Famous question. So it's different ways to try to get out of the problem. The Rav Heschel in Chanukah's Torah says, very simple. He says it was a problem of the Bachar Hazetzer, right? The famous the one that was right. That's printer printing error. Taut Sofer, right? And what happened? That it really, what did it say in the early editions of Rashi? It says that Mem Beis Ishkula Keneged Kol HaMakos. Right, to tell us that Mem Beis was in Rashi Tevas Ishkula Keneged Kol HaMakos. So the Bachar Zetzer, what did he said, what is Mem Beis? Makas Bechoros. So it tells them, Makas Bechoros, Eshkula Keneged Kol HaMakos. So, what was the mistake? That's not what Rashi meant, Makas Bechoros. He meant Makas Barad. It's also Mem Beis. That's what the Pasuk is talking about, right? And you shall echad kol megay fosai. Now Makos Barat kol megay fosai. So Rajesh doesn't tell us that membeis is shkula kenego meaning Makos Barat. But the one that was opened up the Rashi Tevas instead of writing Makos Barat, Makos Bechora. The Chanukah Torah says, but Rav Baruch Rosenblum, he says he wants to give a little bit of credence to the Bachar Zetzer, you know, give Dan Luchavskus a little bit, and why he did that. And he says the following. He says, we find an interesting thing, that by the makas, dams v'ere kini maro, it doesn't say by any of the makas. We don't say makas dam, makas v'ere makas. This is dams v'ere kini maro, until you get to the last one, makas b'choros. The last one says makas. Well, they're all makot. Why only dafka by the last one does it say makas b'choros? So the answer they give, is famous answer, is because all the other nine, they themselves, the thing itself was the makas, dam. That's the makkah. There was dam everywhere. It's fadeya. That's the makkah. There was fadeya. Kinim. There was kinim. Whatever. But bechoros, it's not a makkah. Bechoros are a makkah. The people that are bechoros is a makkah. It's not a makkah. It's that the bechoros were killed. Oh, so therefore you have to write makkahs bechoros. Okay. Famous Arabs, as they say. Based on that, he wants to say that's what happened over here. This Bachar HaZetzer, he was reading Rashi, and it says, this is to tell us that Membeis is Shkula Keneged Kol HaMakos, right? So he says, Membeis, now what's Membeis? So he says, it's Mistama, not Makas Barad. Why? Because why does Rashi have to say Makas Barad? You don't have to say Makas Barad. Barad is a Makas by itself, like Dam Tvadi Akini Amaro. So what is Membeis? It's probably not Makas Barad. What must it be? The only Makas that you have to say Makas before you say it and say what it is, and that is Makas Bechoros. And therefore, that's why you wrote Makas Bechoros. Reminded me that there's a few places like that we see these mistakes that claim were mistakes from the Bachar Zetzer. One of them is in Hilchus Tisha B'Av, right? The Shulchan Aruch says that during the 9 days you're not supposed to eat meat, right? So it says that the Rama brings down over there exceptions, right? He says the one exception is, as I said, if you're on a bris mila, if you're making a bris or in the 9 days you can have meat, and he says, and siyum meseches. You make a Sima Seches and Sudas Erison. That's what the Rama says. You know, Bismila, Sima Seches, and Sudas Erison. So, everybody there asked the question. Mishnah Berurah's brother, everybody asked the question. Sudas Erison says you're not allowed to make a Sudas Erison during the 9 days. So it says it earlier on in the Sif before. Is one of the things you're not allowed to make. You're not allowed to make a Sudas Erison during the 9 days. So how could, then the Rama says, that Sudas Erison is one of the times you're allowed to eat meat during the 9 days. You're not allowed to make a Sudas Erison during the 9 days. There's different answers. So some say it's the Bachar Zetzer. Why? Because that the original printing said what? That you're allowed to eat meat for Pidyon HaBen, Siyum Meseches, and the Samach Aleph. That's how it was written originally. Samach Aleph, Rashi Tevas. So the Bachar Zetzer, what did he write? Oh, Samach Aleph, Sudas Erison. But that's not what it meant. What did the Rama really meant? What was the Samach Aleph? Usfari Macherim. Mm-hmm. Meaning, Bris Mila, Si Maseches, Visfari Macherim. Maseches, or other Sfarim. But he wrote Samachala, Sfari Macherim, and made a mistake, and he wrote Sudas Erison. Holy. Okay.